Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joining us now on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, the Big Ten Network, the All-American Jerry DiNardo, joining us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline, talking some college football. Jerry, appreciate the time today.
Good to be with the group back again.
So now, Jerry, there's been a lot of changes that we have now seen across the Big Ten, but one constant in Ohio State at the top. Can we talk about the Big Ten West and what's going on in Minnesota?
Well, they're hitting on all cylinders for sure. Exceeding expectations the second year for sure. You know, one of the things that we came out of camp thinking is, you know, the offensive line was probably a little bit behind maybe the rest of the team and some of the offensive lines in the conference. But, you know, they're running so many RPOs and they're doing so many different things with formations. I think they bought that offensive line some time. And now, you know, they're playing pretty good. Joe Rossi continues to do good work on defense, and you know, they won some close games early in the year. They got a lot of confidence, and now they're a pretty good team. Certainly better than most of us, including myself, expected going into the year.
Do you feel like at Minnesota this is sustainable? I mean, like, are they here to stay? Because the West has really kind of been about Wisconsin, then maybe Iowa. But now you're looking at Minnesota. Are there a new player now in the West?
Not yet. If you look at the recruiting rankings right now, they're actually sixth in the West. The only team they're ahead of right now is Illinois. And they've got a decent-sized class already. So it's not like a case of a recruiting class being ranked low because they haven't signed a bunch of kids. You could say that about Nebraska. I think they only have 13 commitments. But I think sustainability is about recruiting, okay, because – you know, you look at the people that have sustained their program. They may not all be great recruiters like Urban Meyer. That's certainly one of the reasons he sustained at a high level. You look at a team like Iowa. You look at a team like Wisconsin. They were sustainable because they knew their recruiting niche, and it might be different than the Penn States and the Michigans and the Ohio States. So I don't think PJ's been there long enough to say that he's sustaining a recruiting edge. He's certainly a good coach. He's certainly a different kind of guy. And I think he's got much more of a future than, say, Tracy Clays and Jerry Kill, because he is different, he is unique, and he is young. So there's definitely a step forward. Sustainability is about recruiting, not really about the other stuff.
I saw a piece the other day, and you probably saw it too, on ESPN about Scott Frost in Nebraska, and in there, there are former players talking about the fact that they're getting a little bit concerned here that Nebraska could go the way of Army, who Army, you know, years and years and years ago were, you know, one of those top football programs or whatever, and eventually it got away from them, and they'd never been able to get that success back. And Scott Frost, in that article, Tom Osborne talks about the fact that he's kind of viewed as the Messiah in Lincoln, Nebraska, that he was going to come back and resurrect this program and put them back on top. And obviously this year has not gone the way that Nebraska has wanted. Do you think they're in such peril, like some of their former players are saying, that if they don't get this thing fixed quickly, they're not going to have that history to fall back onto when it comes to recruiting?
No, I think it's a different day. You know, those ex-players, I'm guessing, were maybe part of it when it was the Big Two and the Little Six, when it was Oklahoma and Nebraska in the Big Eight until Colorado came on. And so it's much different. What Jim Harbaugh and what Scott Frost are doing with the programs that they both quarterback is a lot harder to do than when they played. When Jim played at Michigan, it was Michigan and it was Ohio State. It was Bo Schembechler. It was Woody Hayes. It was two teams. Nebraska was Barry Switzer, Tom Oswald. I mean, those days are so far gone. Here's the problem with ex-players. And the only reason I know this is I'm an ex-player, but I'm an ex-coach probably more than an ex-player. Here's the problem with ex-players. They only see college football through their eyes at the time that they were at their
program. It was Jason Peter who said it.
Okay, so what year did Jason play? I mean, I remember the name, but you have to refresh my memory.
Mid-90s, I think, yeah. Somewhere in that area. So
in the mid-90s, college football, it was a flat world. Now it's a round world. I mean, it's not even close to what it was like in the mid-90s. I mean, I was at LSU in the mid-90s. Football has changed so much since then. And so you can't an ex-player, their only perspective is 40 years of Tom Osborne. Would they lose three games? That's a pretty good perspective.
Yeah, right.
Pretty easy. There was Title IX. There was 120 guys, 150 guys on the team. On and on and on. So I know I'm rambling. All I'm saying is, let's go to year three with Scott Frost. The other thing is, and this is a universal problem, year two presents a morale problem that year one doesn't. Everybody buys into year one, the year one coach's message, right? Even the guys that didn't play for the other coach, because the guys that didn't play for the other coach, they know it was the other coach's fault. They didn't recognize talent. In year two, the same guys that didn't play under Mike Riley are now not playing under Scott Frost. So all of a sudden, there's not 100% buy-in. There's 10% of guys that say, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about either. So there's some morale issues in year two you don't have in year one. So I think the Nebraska people have to be a little patient, a little more patient. If they thought Scott Frost was going to come in 2 years, make it look like Tom Osborne's program, that was a mistake.
I know we're talking about the Big Ten, but it just feels like, too, you look at these signature programs, though, it seems like, you know, teams like USC, Michigan, Florida State. I mean, those were, yeah, I guess back in the day were signature programs, and they've just kind of fallen on hard times. And I guess it will be tough to think that there's no players in California, and all of a sudden they've dried up in Florida, and Florida State can't get them. You can even look at Notre Dame. I know their game plan is a little different than most, but you look at a lot of these signature programs, they're just not as dominant as they once used to be.
Yeah, it's true. But I also believe this. If you have greatness in your past, you can have greatness in your future, because the reason that you had greatness in your past is probably still there. Of course there's players in California. That's one of the reasons they were so good. It's a private school. It's a private education. It's glamorous. It's sexy. The Coliseum. Those things haven't changed. It's the right coach at those players. If you take Urban Meyer and say you put him at Michigan 5 years ago, this is Jim Harbaugh's fifth year at Michigan.
Right.
Do we think it would look different right now if Urban Meyer went to Michigan instead of Ohio State?
Yes, I think it would. Yeah, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
And yet the tradition wouldn't have changed, and so on and so forth. So, in recent college football here, recent college football history, there's not a program that without the right coach can't come back, in my opinion.
Talking with the legend Jerry DiNardo here on the Wendy's Big Show, Big Ten Network, where you can find the Wisconsin Badgers and Nebraska Cornhuskers coming up at 11 tomorrow. Jerry, as you look across the Big Ten and also, too, you try to see where these college football playoff teams are going to end up coming out of, with Minnesota being the team right now that could end up being the undefeated Big Ten champion, we answer a lot of questions here about if Wisconsin was that. Would they get in, or would they get, downgraded because of the history of the program, that they haven't been to that level yet? If Minnesota is clearly in there undefeated, beating Ohio State, beating Penn State, they're going to the college football playoff, correct?
Correct. Any undefeated Big Ten team is going to the college football playoff, without a doubt, especially after being left out the last 2 years. The whole playoff system would just fall apart. There would be expansion within a year or two. It's just not good for football. I'm going to tell you guys, you look at that committee. I have lost all confidence in that committee. I mean, I look at the makeup of it. Since Barry and since Tom Osborne left, there is not a coach that has been appointed that has ever had any exposure coaching-wise north of the Mason-Dixon line. I mean, you just look at the committee when we're off the air. You put it up there. You look at the history of the committee. The first three coaches were Tom Osborne, Barry Alvarez, and Tyrone Willingham. And I'm guessing that Barry and Tom leaned to the Big Ten. I think probably Tyrone was probably impartial. And I'm not saying that the Southern coaches are doing this maliciously. They just think that they're better, just like we probably think we're better. There's bias, and who is allowed? If you look at the makeup of that committee, some of those people have no football background whatsoever. And you guys know coaching personalities. Some of them can't shut up, like me. So the strongest voices in that room are the three coaches. Coached at Arkansas, Clemson, Texas A&M, Vanderbilt, on and on and on. Just look at their background. And so, this is part of the problem.
Well, let me ask you this. So do you think they should expand this kind of playoff format or no?
I do, and here's why. And I was a BCS guy. I didn't want to go from 2 to 4. But here's what I've convinced myself of. It's easier to pick 2, and I know we're not going back to the BCS because I think 2 is pretty easy to pick. I think 4 is the most difficult number to pick. I think 6 helps you, 8 helps you even more. And I got to tell you, guys, when I look at that committee, we're asking them to do too much.
Right.
They're not that good. You know how good you have to be to pick 14?
Hey, coach.
How much video you have to watch,
coach.
How knowledgeable you have to know about the game. They can't do it. We've given them an impossible task.
Coach, listen, I got an idea, right? So this is what we do. And I'll try and organize
Steve's
it for
full of ideas.
I am full of ideas, but I got a way to do this, and I think you'll be on board with it. So I'll be the one in charge of organizing it. But we'll get all of these people on this board together, right? And we'll have them fill their face with some great food at your restaurant, and then you can kind of oversee everything and help them along their way.
You know, I thought you were going to go with the way of the beer, and I was all in. So you had me until my restaurant, because I'm kind of out of the restaurant business now. Ever since October, I've kind of retired from the restaurant business. But so the brat and the beer might sound good.
That works. But either way, you want to be involved in all of this. So if I nominate you to get in, are you going to go do it for me?
You know, I'm going to have my biases like everybody else has. I'm just saying, this thing has just gotten so crazy. It's just...
So you're saying eight teams then be the perfect number for you?
Okay, now I either 6 or 8. Now, here's my research, okay? If we just take what the last 5 years, if we take the committee's last rating, right, the one that announced the top 4, and you went to 6, every major conference would have been represented at least 3 times as many as 5. If you go 1 through 8 the last 5 years in their last poll, the numbers obviously go up for the Power 5, and you also get a group of 5 in there. My point is, if you didn't change anything but made the damn thing easier for a bunch of people that don't really know, they know a lot of football, but it's an impossible job. If you go 6, every major conference is going to be represented yearly, most likely. If you go 8, definitely every major conference is going to be represented. There's one year that if you went 8, there would have been 3 Big Ten schools.
Wow.
In the tournament. And this is if you do nothing different than just use their last poll and go as deep as 6 or go as deep as 8. We have to make it easier for the committee. We've made it impossible for the committee.
Do you like that idea better than just one representative from each of the top Power 5 conferences, what you just laid out where it is, just take their still rankings and go 1 through 8?
Yeah, I do like it better than that, because I think that's a little bit of a cop-out that I don't want to use, because there may come a year when a conference doesn't have a good team.
Right.
You know, there may come a year when the SEC or the Big Ten have 4 good teams, you know. So I don't want to make it that cut and dry. I'm telling you, if we just expand it, unless we get a better committee, we have 2 choices, get a better committee or expand it. That's kind of where I'm coming from.
You know, when you look at this Big Ten versus, say, the SEC, which obviously is the number one conference in college football, and you go through and you look at the coaches in this division, when Urban Meyer was at Ohio State, he kind of called out everybody in the division or in the conference saying that we all have to recruit at a higher level. It just can't be Ohio State competing against all these top schools. And we had Darrell Thompson on the other day, and Darrell Thompson was saying that since Fleck has got into Minnesota, he goes after some of the same guys at Alabama and Auburn and everybody else is. Meanwhile, if you talk to Barry Alvarez, who we've had on this station a number of years ago, he says, well, there's not exactly players raising their hands to come to Wisconsin. And the overall general philosophy of recruiting when you're at a Big Ten school, do they just have to shoot for bigger fish in general from team to team across this conference in order to try and catch up, kind of like Fleck is trying to do at Minnesota?
Okay, first of all, Fleck is not signing the same people that Alabama and Ohio.
No. Darrell Thompson didn't say he was signing them, but he said he's trying to get into the same living rooms as the same guys at Alabama and those are. Not that they're getting them, but he's at least trying to get themselves involved in the conversation.
Okay, I don't think there's anything wrong with trying to get in in the conversation. I would say that that's a good strategy. But the number one strategy is, what is your niche in recruiting? I mean, Wisconsin's had a niche in recruiting, and it has served them well. And what's the end goal? I mean, I think you can win the West 3 out of 4 years and continue to coach at Wisconsin for the rest of your life. I think you could win the West 2 out of 4 years in Minnesota and coach the rest of your life. You could lose 2 games in 2 years at Ohio State and get fired.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, what's my niche and what's my administrative expectations, okay? And, like, if you look at Wisconsin's niche, it certainly has worked. They have been to Indianapolis more than anybody else in the conference. Yeah. That's, and their niche in recruiting, whatever it is, I think we all have opinions what it is, that works. This is what I'm saying. We don't really know PJ's niche yet. He hasn't really been there long enough. I do know this. The faster you sign that, the faster you figure out your niche, the longer you'll wind up
coaching
at that point.
Well, then let me ask you this. I'll throw out coaches. You tell me if you know their niches. Pat Fitzgerald, Northwestern.
Do I know his niche?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're asking?
Yeah, correct. And what is it?
Well, first of all, it's not initial eligibility, right?
Nope.
Right.
You know, you have to it's somewhere between normal admissions, because they're not playing with kids that are normally admissible to their school, just like none of us do. And so it's somewhere between normal admissions, and I don't know how the line is. I don't think Fitz is a recruiter that's going to play all the games, so I don't think he's going to be the social media guy. He's not going to be, you know, the crazy friendly recruiter. You know, he's going to be pretty businesslike. And, you know, it's worked okay. It's worked okay.
When you talk about Harbaugh at Michigan, he was the crazy social media guy going and sleeping at people's houses and climbing trees and doing all that crap when he first got to Michigan. Seemingly that has toned down. Do you think he's kind of rethought and changed his recruiting style?
No, I just think it's probably less public. I don't think that's served him well. And to me, the scheme niche has overridden his recruiting niche. I think his recruiting niche is okay. But think about it, until this year, he had a high-risk defense with a conservative West Coast offense. So Don Brown's blitzing, right, giving up a couple big plays, giving up 2 or 3 touchdowns, and they have this plodding offense that there's no way, with the time remaining in the game, that slow West Coast methodical offense could ever catch up. Look at the South Carolina bowl game 3 years ago. They had like a 12-point lead with 3 minutes left in the third quarter. Don keeps blitzing. Jim can't score another point. Mm-hmm. And a terrible South Carolina team. Yep. And so now, finally, although I don't know that this is purely a spread team, it looks like a spread team mixed in. I'm calling it a West Coast spread. It's got a lot of West Coast principles into it, because I think Jim wants to be able to still call a play that he knows. But at least they're a little bit more explosive, plus Don's now playing more zone coverage. So I think his biggest problem was scheme niche more than recruiting niche.
Jerry, appreciate it, man. We can't wait to keep watching Big Ten Network tomorrow as the Badgers take on Nebraska there. And we always appreciate you, and you have a couple of minutes for us here on the Wendy's Big Show. Really appreciate it, Jerry.
Thanks, guys.
Take it easy. That's Jerry DiNardo from the Big Ten Network joining us here on the Great Midwest Bank Hotline. If you're looking to buy, build, renovate, or refinance in 2019, look no further. Call Great Midwest Bank today. Great Midwest Bank, providing simply local common sense lending to your community since 1935.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.